Saturday, May 4th in Chicago, check out our Jealousy Show. Storytelling, panel Q&A, interviews, and more. Sponsored by Rowan Tree Counseling. Get your tickets at wildandsublime.com or go to the link in the show notes. See you there.
Black sexual maturity exists, number one, and it should be respected. It should be in the forefront and should be shown. If you're going to show the community in this kind of way, you know, beyond the fetish, because like a lot of times people, it's like they in their minds can't tell the difference between what's just fetishizing something and what is actually participation.
Welcome to Wild and Sublime, a sexy spin on infotainment, no matter your preferences, orientation, or relationship style. Based on the popular live Chicago show, I chat about sex and relationships with citizens from the world of sex positivity and comedy. You'll hear meaningful conversations, dialogues that go deeper, and information that can help you become more free in your sexual expression. I'm sex educator Karen Yates. Our monthly Patreon supporters pay for a large part of our operating expenses. Their contributions from $5 on up help us big time. Plus, members get discounts on show tickets and merch and receive Wild and Sublime news before anyone else and more. Interested in helping us spread the message of sex positivity? Go to patreon.com/wildandsublime. Hi, folks. We don't have many filmmakers on the show, so it is a real treat to be able to talk with David Weathersby, filmmaker and the founder of City Vanguard, an arts organization that produces Black and marginalized themed documentaries here in Chicago. Today, we are going to be talking with him about some of his recent films that explore the intersection of kink and Black culture here in Chicago and beyond. Welcome, David Weathersby.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Of course. And before we begin, I want to say that we are on the unceded lands of the Council of Three Fires, the Ojibwe, the Odawa, and the Potawatomi nations. So, David, you are now working on Sex in Color, a documentary series that delves into the historical and contemporary aspects of Black sexuality. Kinky and Loving It, the first episode in the series, is 43 minutes long and was an official selection of Chicago's Black Harvest Film Festival and the Halifax Black Film Festival. You co-directed it with Mr. Scott. So what prompted you to want to create this series?
It started before I did Sex and Color. I did a documentary called The Debauchery Ball, which kind of explored Black culture, Black sexuality, Black expression. And it kind of sent me down the rabbit hole and kind of expressing that. And through that project, I saw a lot of different communities. And I wanted to do a project where we could kind of tackle some of the topics in an episode form. So it's not like you're just a segment probably where you can dedicate an entire episode onto the one topic. And so that's where Sex and Color came into play. And I knew right away that I wanted the Sex and Color, even though it would be various episodes, the episodes would follow and try to capture one of three topics: lifestyle, expression, and then and practice, basically. Mm-hmm. So those are the three things. So people's, identity, lifestyle, and expression. So those three elements within Black sexuality.
So a lot of folks that were interviewed in both this episode and the documentary, The Debauchery Ball, which has a BDSM theme, and we'll be discussing that later, talk about how within mainstream Black culture, there's not as much of an opportunity to express one's sexual, sensual self. Did you feel that it was difficult to get folks in Kinky and Loving It to open up and to be filmed doing BDSM activity?
I thought it was going to be a lot harder than it really was. I think working with Mr. Scott and him being such a prevalent figure in the Black kink community in Chicago made it a lot easier. He knew a lot of people. He called them and everything. And so it was a lot easier for him. Having him aboard and having his being able to co-direct this project with him made it a lot easier. But there was also elements of making sure consent, and it's just why some people in the documentary, they're covered, they're facing away. So it was really consent and your intentions are always important in projects like that, but it was even more so. So it was allowing people to kind of tell the story in the context that they wanted to tell the story in their comfort level. So Mr. Scott made it easier, but we still had to make sure that we were honoring the subject's wishes and how, not just their story, but the context in which they wanted to tell the story.
So I was wondering, as a filmmaker, you know, it's sort of like hitting a gold mine to have subjects that open, right? Mm-hmm. Did you find for yourself that as you were creating, say as you were editing it, because I know City Vanguard was editing the footage, did you find you had to sort of work around your own? Did you have to make a decision about, okay, I'm really going for this? Like, mm-hmm. I'm really on the cutting room, you know, as I'm cutting this, I'm really making a decision about what's in the movie and what's not. Did you ever think, oh, wow, this is too much?
No, my biggest restraint was basically just time, and being that this was going to be in an episode, it was just kind of fitting in an episode. But no, when I'm doing a project, whether it's Sex and Color or anything, it's just my thing is just to let people talk, let them have a platform, mm-hmm. let them have a voice, and let them not just tell their story, but like I say, let them tell them in the context in the way that they want to tell it. You know, and to me, it's easier to either let them do that, because if there's a counter narrative, you can interview, you can do that. You can kind of put in things that, you know, kind of give context later, but you don't want to censor people right there in the spot. Let them speak, let them tell their truth, and then see where that falls in editing in the editing process later.
You generously provided a clip from the movie, so let me cue it up here. And this is from Mr. Scott. And is there anything else you would like to say about Mr. Scott before we listen to this?
Thank you. It was Mr. Scott was really interesting, because I realized I wanted to do an episode, and I realized I wanted to be about BDSM and impact and role play. And literally, it couldn't have been more than 24 hours after I decided this was going to be the episode, he emailed me and said, "Hey, I want to do a documentary on BDSM and so we're just like, okay. So.
And he had a book. He has a book, right? Mm-hmm. Isn't it called Kinky and Loving It?
Yeah, that's why. Okay. And because of, you know, I had name for the episodes, and because of, you know, I was so appreciative of his contribution, that's why I named it. I just named it after. Mm-hmm. I had to name his book, because it's like, I can't thank him enough for every day.
Awesome. So here he is.
I look at BDSM as a culture and as a community. When I think of the Mazuku, who is a male dom in Orlando, Florida, he says that the stigma of European stuff sometimes gets on people's minds, and you shouldn't think like that. And just think about, do what feels good to you. Don't look at it as this is something that somebody else does. No, this is something that people of color do, everybody does.
I love what he had to say here. What are your thoughts?
I thought it was spot on. That's the reason why I really kind of gravitated towards that clip. It was realizing that this is something that, like he says, everybody does. It's just showing that, but everybody does it from their own cultural and society and historical basis, and that should be honored. That should be respected. It shouldn't be people conforming to one thing. That's just like, if we're all doing this, there's room that there's no problem. There should be no conflict for somebody doing it coming from their own self, from their own personal experiences, their history, their, you know, backgrounds, their desires, their all that should be a part of it.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I really loved about Kinky and Loving It, but also about the Debauchery Ball, is you're really capturing people expressing themselves naturally, irrespective of what the greater culture might say or mainstream Black culture might say. And I thought that was just such a, it was just a fascinating exploration. And so I just want to say thank you. I loved watching the films and just getting this insight into this particular aspect of Black sexuality as it exists. Well, let's just say in Chicago for now. We can talk a little bit more about that in a second. Yeah. But, you know, this other another person, Solomon, who is a rope practitioner and photographer, he talked about rope play and that within Black culture, one needs to take into consideration the layers of meaning with rope, namely the associations with lynching, of Black men being restrained by the police. But then he discusses, and I thought this was really fascinating, the positive aspect of reestablishing trust with one another in the Black community. And he spoke specifically about the relations between Black men and women. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. His statement and what he said really drove home to me that intention is everything, or intention is very important. And that a lot of times you can, the line between respecting and between culture or the, is your intention of what you're trying to do, explaining what it is. And sometimes there's a lot of time when we talk about representation, it's not just so much that you want somebody who looks like you, but somebody who understands what you're feeling, mm-hmm. that understands where you're coming from when you bring up a subject. And that's what happens. That's what he's explaining. You know, talking to the robot and explaining to them, listen, I understand that that trigger could be there. And if it is there, we're doing something else. Mm-hmm. And that goes a long way. And it's and I'm really glad that he brought that up on his own, because that wasn't prompted. But when I was doing the research for this project, that was like the first question that I came up with. And he just kind of, before it was even asked, it was addressed.
Right.
But it all stems from your intentions and having someone that's not only willing to listen and but understands it is will ask you ahead of time,
mm-hmm.
what is that feeling? And a lot of times having somebody who understands, who's willing to do that, helps people kind of tackle or address a trauma.
For sure.
And so that's the other thing. It's like if you do have this trauma for anything like this, having somebody who understands, who may have gone through the same situation, listen, I'm doing this. It's not, you know, this is from a place of love. This is not from a place of, and then it helps people kind of get through that trauma. I've seen that a lot of times where people are very reluctant and like you have rope, but they see the love around it and realize that this is not somebody mimicking a past trauma. This is somebody helping you get through
absolutely.
A generational trauma.
Absolutely.
And that's what the person's here for. So that's why I think, that's why I wanted to start with rope, because it's complex. But because of that, it's kind of addressing a trauma through kind of love and understanding and comfort and, you know, being represented in an authentic way.
For sure. And I would just tell the listeners, like, if you're interested in rope, this is really a great episode to check out, because it has, I don't know, there's just a lot of rope scenes in it, and there's a lot of tying, and you get, I think it's a great episode just to start, no pun intended, wrapping your mind around this idea of why people do rope. Mm-hmm. I think it's really easy to be like, why do people do rope? And there's there I think there can be a lot of ahas for people if you have that question. But, you know, in terms of talking about relations between folks, intimate relations between folks, I mean, you know, for kink is like the ultimate communication modality. You know, you have to be so, I don't know, open and thinking about all these things. I mean, obviously some people do it better than others, mm-hmm. but optimally it can be an amazing tool for beginning to, build a bridge between two people.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I've like, one of the robots, what she says, it feels like a hug.
Yeah.
And for, I know a lot of people who may not be in the lifestyle to hear that,
mm-hmm.
they might, the last thing they would have thought about is rope being associated with a hug.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, I've heard that kind of sentiment multiple times,
mm-hmm.
that the restraint feels like a hug. It feels like an embrace. And I think that goes back to, you know, being intentional, having somebody who represents, who understands you, giving you that hug and making sure that that feeling comes through. It's not just a coincidence that it feels like a hug, that I'm intentionally making this, doing this, so it is a hug.
Right. And I think there's a lot of folks talking about, you know, what it's like to be a rope top, what it's like to be a rope bottom. And I think that your episode does a really great job of helping people who might not be kinky understand that, you know, being a dominant is not exactly what you think it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's the situations are reversed. I mean, the bottom is in power,
yeah.
You know, and really calling the shots in a scene.
Yeah. And that's something that has to be driven home, because I hear people all the time about how people who don't understand what a dom means and they don't understand the power. So they come in kind of abrasive and,
oh my gosh.
Right. And they don't understand that, you know, submission is a gift.
Absolutely.
It's a gift that somebody's giving you. You have to earn that gift. And so, yeah, that's one of the biggest misconceptions that, you know, that has to be kind of cleared up right away.
I know. And you do talk about in the film about, like, this notion of, you know, non-melanated spaces usually being... the focus is on, like, cis white doms, you know, and these, you know, in the it can be a very white space, but it can also be like a kind of patriarchal space, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so the other part about the episode that I really liked was Solomon, who is a photographer, just talking about, you know, black representation in the images, mm-hmm. of BDSM, is because, you know, if you go to a dungeon, a lot of times you'll see images on the wall, photographic images. And I thought he made a really good point to say, seeing the images on the wall lets folks know it's okay to be here.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's not just for kinking and loving it, but also the debauchery ball. One of the things I would tell people, the reason why I wanted to do these projects and Sex and Color, is like I wanted to kind of show something that you don't see too much, and that's like black sexual maturity. A lot of times in media, it's either one or two extremes. It's either hyper sexualized black folks, mm-hmm. or almost non sexual.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's either, you know, some just really over-the-top sexual dance, or it's the black sidekick.
Yes, the saint. The saintly black person.
Right, who's just kind of there for say divide, who is like, it's just has no sex at all. You know, it's like that.
And no genitalia.
You're right, right. They have no desires whatsoever, or it's just kind of like, you know, the stereotypical of just, you know, being ravaged by this wild, and there's almost no representation in between of showing black sexual maturity, that, you know, going through the same process, the same journeys, the same desires, the same issues that we have, and stuff like that. So that's what is really a cornerstone of both Sex and Color, Debauchery Ball, and any project I can do is showing that black sexual maturity exists, number one, and it should be respected, and it should be in the forefront, and it should be shown if you're going to show the community in this kind of way, you know, beyond the fetish. Because, like, a lot of times people, it's like they in their minds can't tell the difference between what's just fetishizing something and what is actually participation.
Wow, that is such a good point. That's I shouldn't say it shouldn't be nuanced, but it feels nuanced.
Right.
You know what I mean? Did you know the Wild and Sublime twice monthly newsletter has news, views, and tips about sexuality delivered to your inbox? Plus info on the latest pod episodes and upcoming live show. How do you get this for yourself? Sign up at wildandsublime.com.
Right.
So let's talk about the debauchery ball. So it's your 2019 documentary, The Debauchery Ball, 75-minute film about the ball is a now close to 20-year event in Chicago, produced by Kahari B. Originally, he began it to celebrate Chicago house music culture, and you trace the evolution of the event, which is now more than a single event; it's several yearly events. And the Debauchery Ball website calls it the only fetish-themed, BDSM-friendly, body-positive house party in the city. It has helped redefine Black music, community art, and sexuality. Your film, The Debauchery Ball, has been in numerous festivals and won awards. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So you just brought up a lot, and I want to get back to it. But prior, your production company, City Vanguard, you did a documentary about Chicago house music. And after that, was The Debauchery Ball a natural next step? I mean, and how did it come to be? And can you explain house music to folks?
Well, actually, I did Debauchery Ball before the other one.
Oh my gosh.
So it was Debauchery Ball. Wow. And then I did It's Different in Chicago that showed the house. So it was basically...
Okay.
Ironically, it was like Debauchery Ball was kind of my... you know, world into not just, but house music as well.
So, because
there is, if you know anything about house music, you know how big it is, but you know there's different just offshoots everywhere of different styles and everything like that. So
right.
Debauchery definitely has its own offshoot from it. So I actually came from the reverse and then had to go back to the kind of, I don't want to say, you know, your mainstream house culture,
sure.
You know, we'll call house culture without a king theme and everything.
Yeah.
But one thing I noticed is like, and Kahari says this, and I mean, it was a lot more sensual. House does have a kind of natural sensuality to it,
yeah,
that makes something like the Debauchery Ball kind of an easy transition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of times house is very, it's very loving. It's very, you know, everybody come in, community, be free, you know. Just kind of feel things like that, and it works really well in a you know, adding kink and Afrofuturism and
yeah,
BDSM and all these elements to it. It just blends naturally because
right.
One of the things that since doing the documentary and helping with Debauchery Ball is that Debauchery Ball is a spectrum, because a lot of people said like the person said, they think it's going to be this one big orgy. And no, and that's the beauty of Debauchery Ball, and this one was shown in the documentary, is that Debauchery Ball is a spectrum, it's a range where you can either, some people have full corner, play corners,
mm-hmm.
and impact to rope to,
right.
I'm not going to blame, just right. all things. All things can be in one corner. And then on another corner, it's just somebody listening to the DJ.
Right.
It's just somebody and in there. And what I find beautiful about that, and this is something I noticed about Debauchery Ball, and this is something I try to do with all of them, is that it allows a person to come in where they feel comfortable.
Right, yeah.
Sometimes kink spaces, you know, people feel like they get intimidated because they feel like, I don't really know anything. If I don't want to, you know, I don't want to sit there and look, because then I'm kind of, I don't want to make people uncomfortable. It's hard for them to jump in.
Mm-hmm.
But Debauchery Ball, I mean, you could come in, listen to 4 or 5 songs, have a drink, and then see somebody, you know, with a paddle and say, I want to try that for a second. And then somebody will guide you through, you'll paddle somebody, and then you'll go back to the bar or go back to the...
Right.
And you can go anywhere on that spectrum, and it allows people to come in with their own comfort level. And that's very, very important, that people get to come in to as far as they want to go,
mm-hmm.
and at what point they want to go.
Yeah, I mean, that's the sense I got when I was watching the film, of like how welcoming it is. And, you know, it was so sensuous and joyous watching the film. And one of the things that I think gets repeated over and over again is what a body positive event it is. And it's a way to develop confidence. And one person is quoted as saying, it's a public space to develop your private confidence.
Yeah.
Oh, that struck me. I was like, wow.
Yeah, that phrase has almost become like the mantra of Debauchery Ball. I mean, especially for the documentary, it has become our house slogan. You know, it's
right?
Like, because it really does define and thank you to Pia for summing it up like that. Yeah, that's basically what debauchery is. A lot of people come out,
mm-hmm.
and it's their one time or two times a year where they kind of, you know, just let everything out. And they're not just expressing themselves. They're trying things out about themselves.
Yeah.
And it's the years that I've been doing it, I've watched people go from literally, okay, you know, to hit the dress code, I'm going to wear a black T-shirt. I'm going to wear a black tank top and some black jeans. And then, you know, 3 years later, they're barely dressed at all.
Right.
And it's and it was their choice. And you saw every stop in between, but it was their choice all the way. But yeah, they've gone from black T-shirt to pretty much not wearing anything at all.
Right. And so what was it? Okay, did you experience the debauchery ball before you started filming it?
Yes, I've been there. I've been to one before, and then before I did the documentary, I had known Kahari for a while.
Mm. And who is a local artist poet?
Yeah, poet. Just everything. Kahari mm-hmm. is just the man. Just mm-hmm. Kahari, thank you. Well, if you hear the thank you, Kahari, for everything, you know. But he had asked me to do a couple of recap videos for just debauchery. So that's where it started out.
Okay.
A few years before that, I was just called in and I was just, because there's a team of photographers that do debauchery.
Right.
There's no cell phones allowed in debauchery. You have to check them in with your coat so people can be in the moment. It's also a security issue. So no phones. There's designated photographers who have been, you know, vetted, and that's where you get your media. And then I was on the video side. I was the videographer who was like the vet person did that. And so he called me in, just do a couple recap videos, you know, in private section for people. And then, I don't know, just 1 year, I just looked around and I just realized what it was, you know, just how special
like
it was.
A light bulb moment.
Yeah, yeah, it really was, because I had done it before and I just like, okay, this is cool. It's just a part. And then I just looked at it 1 year and I was like, oh my goodness. I realized what it represented mm-hmm. and what was going on. And so I ran into Kahari and asked him. I was shocked no one had already, I thought there was already mm-hmm. a doc about the bocce ball. He said, okay. And then it was just on from there.
Yeah, it's amazing. You track a number of years, mm-hmm. Which is awesome because you really see this trajectory, which is very satisfying, of how it really has bloomed into something much different than what it started. And what's the dress code? I think Kahari says it, and I was like, I was trying to find it. What is the dress code?
Black and scandalous.
Black and scandalous. Yeah.
That's it. And yeah. It's like, you know, it's all black. You mm-hmm. know, that's the main thing. Colors should just be all black. But, you know, it's just black and scandalous, and you can define what scandalous is for you.
Mm-hmm.
And people have done some amazing jobs of defining that.
Oh, my gosh. The costumes are amazing.
Yeah, it really is. And it's like people literally, and I can vouch for this personally. I had a friend of mine who went to it, and they were literally planning their outfit in the parking lot from the ball. Like, after it finished, they were like, this is what I'm doing next year. And it's like, we've screened it some places and other places. They didn't really, might not understand the need for them, but the outfits are very important.
Mm-hmm.
That's something, and it's something that's a lot of times in the black kink culture that a lot of times the expression of what you're able to wear or how you wear it is an expression of your, you know, your sexual being
mm-hmm.
or your, it's kind of, it's a, it's a, it goes a lot deeper than I just like the way this outfit looked. This is like this is a representation of who I am, who I want to be. And so the outfits are a lot more than just outfits.
Yeah. It was interesting because people talked about all the time about how they were able to express themselves truly in this space, a melanated space.
Mm-hmm.
And as opposed to just mainstream black culture
mm-hmm.
as opposed to, you know, out in the public space.
Right.
And that was, I don't know, it felt very special.
Yeah.
It felt super special.
It is. And it's very special because you just see people grow. You see them allowed to just learn about themselves and not just themselves. Me and Kahari were talking about this the other day. A lot of people don't realize about debauchery ball. A good number of people who attend are couples.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and you see that in your film. You see the older couple, and I wanted to get back to this because you were talking about mature sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
That's what really struck me about this film. There are a lot of folks, you know, above 45
mm-hmm.
on the dance floor,
yeah.
just getting down.
Yeah.
And you know, you interview this one couple, I don't know, 50-somethings.
Mm-hmm.
She was there with her husband, and a guy approached, wanted to tie her up. They all got into consent about this, and I felt like it changed their relationship.
Yes. Yeah. They were in the lifestyle, and that's what you could see. It does. It you see the couples, and this is a moment for them to kind of express and just be with each other in an intimate way. Just like Pia says, coming out in public to find your private self. And so that's one thing that I've noticed, that it really does. It's a place where couples seem to kind of, I guess, renew or kind of express or celebrate their relationship.
Yeah.
You know, in the kind of way. So there'll be the outfits, or, you know, they match in some way, or they're related to each other some way, or, you know, like I've said, I've seen couples where one person is very expressive and the other person is kind of just is the black t-shirt or black tank top person. And then 3 years later, they are dressed almost identical. And, you know, so it's great to see that progression. But yeah, it's a lot of couples, and it's a lot of people just expressing their relationships that they already have.
So let me ask you this. House music is began really in more queer spaces.
Yes.
And would you say the debauchery ball is it queer friendly?
Oh, most definitely.
Okay.
Most definitely. It really is. And yeah, a lot of people are, and that's the thing about it. When I did the interview with debauchery, you know, that was open to people to talk about it. But most of the people, it was about, they just wanted to talk about the ball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like, it was something that people, like, when asked, they weren't, it wasn't a special thing. It's like, of course, you know, I'm just expressing myself, say, regardless of where it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I thought that was something really odd, because think about it, I ask certain questions, but I don't force people.
Right. Yeah.
If they do not want to, or they're not that interested in it or anything like that, I'm not going to, you know, turn somebody into like a make it feel like it's like a token situation where, you know, you have to. They talk about what they want to talk about. And yeah, the ball is all all different spectrum, and it is definitely a queer friend of space and different is, but yeah.
So I was wondering, because we have a lot of listeners from all over, is this something like black folks fly into, go to?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, yes. We, I think the last count was, it was 25% or so was out of town. There's people who fly in from all over the country. One group, they couldn't make it this year, but they had a whole chartered bus planned. Yeah. People come
sure.
in.
Okay.
People come in for the ball.
When is the next one?
Next one is December 8th. It's the first week of December. And then the one before that is first week in August. That's
okay.
going to be August in there. Because there's two. There's the Debauchery Ball, and then there's Winter Baby's Revenge.
Right.
Which is the one, because as the name implies, it's in the summer. It's more for you know, people who can't make it, who want to do something in the summer instead of winter. Mm-hmm. And so, and it has its own theme. It's more of an Afrofuturism, Afrocentric, you know.
Yeah, you don't have to wear black. There's usually a costume theme. Yeah.
But that one is a very interesting ball, because that's where people merge a lot of African historical futuristic with kink. So you get, like, you know, African pattern clothing in a lingerie style,
right?
And that's a lot of merger, and there's a lot of messaging in that, saying that, you know, yourself and your kink, they're not two different things.
Mm-hmm.
One does not rank above the other. One does not disrespect the other. They are all one together. And so that's the beauty of Winter Baby's Revenge, is this mixture of duality of African history, African culture from that, African American all put together around house and kink.
Right.
And so yeah, it's a beautiful merger. So that one's always a really beautiful one.
Yeah, and I'm glad you got some footage of that in the documentary. That was cool to see, like, okay, there's now two events. There might be three at some point, right?
Yeah, there's right. always I mean, just in January, the Bocce Ball had its first art exhibit from the photographers, everybody. They've been collecting photos for years. So they had an exhibit called Permission, where it was just all the photography up in this art exhibit. We had a 2-week run, and it was just all the different photos of people just being free. And so, you know, it's art exhibit. There's an album.
There's an app.
Yeah, there is an app. there's the app. There's the app. There's the yeah, the album that's coming, the art exhibit,
right.
You know, the two balls. So it's really blossomed into this.
That's amazing.
Beautiful thing.
So you can watch the Debauchery Ball on Amazon Prime on Tubi.
Yes.
And then you're finding a home for Kinky and Loving It.
Yes, Kinky and Loving It. We're still, because this is the first episode of a four episode series. We wanted to kind of put this episode out now to kind of show the world, because this is a pilot episode.
Okay,
and it's a proof of concept. I'm actually in production for the next episode.
What's
right
it going to be? Do you mind saying what's going to be? About?
This one is about Black burlesque exhibitionism. And performance, and okay. I'm sorry, Black erotic performance, Black erotic performance, burlesque, mainly burlesque, and just Black exhibitionism. So that's the one right now. So I'm working with some different people, and so yeah, that's the next episode. It's just really diving into the expression
level
of it. So
okay, so you can find David and more info at cityvanguard.com and on Instagram at cityvanguarddocs. And City Vanguard on YouTube, David Weathersby, excuse me, I've got all this stuff here. Blah. Okay, on Instagram, you can also find David at David Weathersby and at Sex in Color. All of these are going to be in the show notes, by the way. If you are melanated, please, no white people. And you're interested in, because I know it sounds really cool, and I can imagine a lot of white folks being like, I want to go to this. If you are melanated and interested in the Debauchery Ball events in Chicago, we will have the links to all of that in the show notes. But you can also go to www.thedebaucheryball.com. Oh my gosh, David, what a great interview. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I really do appreciate this. This is, I could speak for everybody at Sex and Color and Debauchery. We say thank you. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
You're quite welcome. Well, that is it, folks. Have a very pleasurable week. Wild and Sublime is supported in part by our Sublime supporter, Full Color Life Therapy. Therapy for all of you at fullcolorlifetherapy.com. Thank you for listening. Know someone who'd like this episode? Send it to them. You can follow us on Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram at Wild and Sublime. And sign up for newsletters at wildandsublime.com. Got feedback or an inquiry? Contact us at info@wildandsublime.com. And we'd love a review or a rating on your podcast player. I'd like to thank our design guru, Jean-François Gervais. Music by David Ben Porat. This episode was produced and edited at the Lincoln Lodge Podcast Studio as part of the Lincoln Lodge Podcast Network.